Welcome to Blah Blah UFC. It's been a little while since we've been able to talk UFC, the world of mixed martial arts. Benny with you, Tom Crossan as well. So Tom, how you been?
Yep.
Yeah, we've had a little bit of a delayed holiday with New Year rolling around, work picking up for both of us. I know my end has been kind of crazy, but it's been crazy as well in the world of UFC. We've missed a lot. There's a lot to talk about, especially with the two most big, most recent news segments, or news events, I could say. That's what we're going to get down to right here. But really quickly, GSP's back.
Yes, he is.
This seemed like it came out of nowhere, at least for me. I remember GSP, his last fight was in 2013. And since then, I don't fully understand why he walked away. So I guess that's where the story begins. Why did he walk away, and why is he coming back now, Tom?
Well, I think his whole reason for walking away was just because he didn't think it was worth it, because it was not as much. I mean, he was the biggest paid guy in the company back then, which is how he was able to take, 4 years off. But I think that he felt that there wasn't any long-term positive things going on. But with the whole – I think why he's coming back now is because, he's seeing guys like McGregor getting guaranteed $3 million and girls like Rousey getting guaranteed $3 million. I think that plays a big factor. And then he is – I believe he's one of the biggest biggest faces of this whole MMAAA, the Mixed Martial Arts Association or whatever, which they're trying to set up something that will create sort of like a pension thing that will help fighters out after they're done fighting. So I think that plays a big part. And, he's still in, the athletic prime of his life. I want to say he's 32 years old, maybe 33. Oh, he's actually 35. I just looked it up.
He looks like he's 32 or 33.
Yeah. So his last fight was 4 years ago, so he technically retired when he was 31. Mm-hmm. So I think his body's holding up, and, he figured if he – a lot of people thought he lost his last fight to Johnny Hendricks, so I think he wants to come back and really put a stamp on his career and prove that that he retired, that he did win his last fight, and that he retired on top, and I think he wants to cement his legacy.
His last fight, you mentioned Johnny Hendricks in 2013. His last loss, 2007, to Matt Serra. So he hasn't lost in 10 years, coming back. You brought up his age, 35 years old. And, of course, going back a couple of shows, if you dig enough, we were talking about CM Punk being closer to 37, 38. Is this, I don't want to set up a trend here, but you have Silva fighting until he's getting up there. You have GSP, coming back. You have CM Punk, who decided to try this at an older age. Do you see like a trend building here with people that are over the hump, so to speak, of being like 33, 34? Just trying to, come back in or get involved or continue their career. Is this becoming a bit of a trend in the world of mixed martial arts?
I think with the legends of the sport, it's easier for guys like Anderson Silva and guys like GSP to fight longer and later into their lives because they were so dominant for so long. Because, I believe Anderson Silva won 16 fights in a row.
Yeah.
He never really – were the only fight where he really took any sort of damage in that streak was the first fight against Chael Sonnen. But, it wasn't really crazy strikes. It was ground strikes, which aren't as impactful as, strikes on the feet. And same thing with GSP. He was so dominant for so long where, you know, the hardest fight of his career, other than his losses, was his last fight against Johnny Hendricks, and then, you know, it took 4 years off, or three and a half, I guess. I think that when you're winning so many fights so dominantly, you're able to stick around longer because your body doesn't take as much damage.
GSP returning again is the big topic here, and you brought up the money, and that's another thing I wanted to hit on. He comes back to the welterweight division, and
we don't know that yet.
Just assuming he might want to go back there. Yeah, you're right. I may have overstepped my line here, but we're assuming he might want to go back to the welterweight division. You're right. We don't exactly know. But there was a pretty famous welterweight once upon a time by the name of Conor McGregor. Question for you, Tom. Do you believe down the road this is a potential matchup that Dana White would love to have at a later UFC pay-per-view?
Okay, first off, Conor McGregor is not a famous welterweight. He had two welterweight fights, and that was nonsense. It should have never happened at welterweight. Anyway, I do think that fight is possible, especially because there's word on the street now that GSP wants to come back at lightweight, so that he always felt like he could drop to 155, and he continues saying that he could do it. But the reason I don't think it would happen is because they are the two biggest stars, where I think, because the UFC is a business, that if let's say Conor McGregor does a pay-per-view where he headlines against anybody else. Mm-hmm. Let's just say it does a million five buys. GSP does a pay-per-view on his own. His comeback fight, he'll probably do 1.5 million. That's 3 million buys. Mm-hmm. in two shows. If you put GSP and Conor McGregor against each other, there's no way it does near 3 million buys. So I think they could make more money, the UFC, if they do separate shows with them. But I mean, hell yeah, that's a fight I would want to see, and I'm sure a lot of other fans would want to see.
You don't think that that's a pay-per-view or a fight that would do, like, of course, not saying like, oh, immediately go to it, but, you know, GSP comes back, his return fight, obviously it's a lot of buys, get another fight out of GSP, get the big fight out of McGregor, and we're going to get to that a little bit later. Get a couple fights out of McGregor, get a couple fights out of GSP, build this thing up, and then have him fight it. Let's say down the road, UFC 220, let's say, for the sake of the argument, UFC 220, 222, you do GSP versus McGregor, or UFC 225, GSP versus Conor McGregor.
I think it all depends on where they can book it. If they can book Croke Park in Ireland, then, you know, with the, because I think that stadium seats 90,000, 100,000 people. Mm-hmm. You know, and being in Ireland with McGregor, I think that would be the only place that they would do something like that. And I think they would get the biggest money out of it as GSP's comeback fight. Because GSP's comeback fight is going to be his biggest pay-per-view.
Oh yeah.
In the coming months, years, however long he continues to fight. But I don't know, man, McGregor, I don't think McGregor would take that fight at lightweight because, for one, I don't think he's gonna defend his belt. He's never defended a belt in his career. No. He's gonna figure out a way to not defend the belt. So I think what happens with GSP, I think GSP either goes up to middleweight and fights Bisping, or GSP fights the winner of the welterweight title fight between Tyrone Woodley and Stephen Thompson, or maybe he fights Nick Diaz again at welterweight, because, you know, Nick Diaz is probably the second biggest star at welterweight.
Hasn't been doing anything since the McGregor fight.
Yeah, he hasn't done anything. So watching them two go at it again would also be a big pay per view. The UFC's got options with GSP. I mean GSP is, other than McGregor and maybe Lesnar, but GSP's might even be a bigger pay-per-view star than Lesnar in the MMA world. So he's like top 2-3 stars ever. They could they could put him against a paper bag and it would sell pay-per-views.
I would definitely watch GSP fight a paper bag. You brought up Lesnar. Ship has sailed on him, so to speak, as it doesn't look like he's ever going to have a fight in the UFC ever again. But
yeah, Lesnar came out and said that he doesn't even know where his UFC titles are. He doesn't care. he's done.
Probably out back in his shed next to his tractor. He's a lunatic. Nick Diaz versus GSP. Those are two guys that would really enjoy a big payday with that. But so are we definitively saying, basically, I shouldn't say we're definitively, but like, what would you say is the reason he's coming back? Is it love of the sport, or you think it's all dollar signs?
Yeah, I don't know, because the UFC offered, they had two big opportunities for GSP. They had offered him to come back at UFC 200, which was supposed to be the biggest card ever, which ended up being an epic fail because of Conor McGregor and because of Jon Jones needing to pull out. So they offered GSP that fight, which would have been a huge payday. They offered GSP UFC at 206, I believe, which was in Canada. Mm-hmm. 206, which was in Canada, which would have been a big payday for him because he's Canadian, and he turned down both of them. So after that, I really didn't think he was coming back. So I really, really have no clue why he's coming back now, because I can't imagine it's for money, because I can't imagine anything that he's got coming up would have made more money than UFC 200 or UFC 206 for him at home. I think it's just, you know, pride and the fact that a lot of people think he lost his last fight. And that he still trains all the time, so he's still in great shape. So I think it's just pride, and that he wants to cement his legacy and really come back with a statement after a lot of people thought he lost his last fight, myself included. I thought Johnny Hendricks won that fight, but it was close. So I think he's going to come back, and I think he's going to do big things, and I'm really excited.
Well, I would say they could do a rematch of Hendricks versus GSP, but Hendricks has moved on to different things. I saw Hendricks debuted at a new weight class, 185.
Yes.
And he won. I believe he won his debut.
Yes, he looked fantastic.
This seems like this is going to be the right weight class for him. I know he's had a little bit of a history missing weight here and there, but this looks like this looks like the weight class that he's going to be most comfortable at.
Yeah, I mean, I still can't believe he couldn't make the welterweight limit. He's like 5'9", which is like Conor McGregor's height, and he doesn't bulk up, he gets fat in between his camps. He gets up to like 220 pounds. So in like an 8-week camp or a 6-week fight camp, he's got to lose 50 pounds, and a majority of his camp is focused on losing weight, and it just doesn't make sense why he needed to move up. But, he moved up. He fought a tough guy in Hector Lombard on Sunday night, and he looked great. And I think he's going to do all right at 185. I don't think he's going to win the title, but no. I think he'll be a top 10 guy for years to come.
He's definitely going to be a guy you can line up with some decent fights and fill out your card. But nothing will be able to stop the fact that he's a little bit of a connoisseur of fast food. Anyway, before we get into the big fight, and of course the big fight we're talking about is the Mayweather-McGregor fight, we have to do some reviewing. UFC 208 has come and gone, and there was a lot that happened at it. A couple of legends, Glover Teixeira, Anderson Silva taking place, Jim Miller on the card as well. Holly Holm, a legend killer, the first big bump in the Ronda Rousey road, and she had a fight as well. So, Tom, your review of 208, we'll start with the prelims. Was there anything on the prelims that you found interesting?
Not really. Overall, I thought it was a pretty pretty lackluster card. The only fight that I really really enjoyed was the Jim Miller Dustin Poirier fight. That was a war. But nothing crazy in the prelims. Rather boring. The fight pass prelim was a decision. All four preliminary fights were a decision. The only finish was the Jacare Souza fight. Mm-hmm. On the whole card. So overall, pretty boring card, but nothing too crazy on the prelim. I hated the Anderson Silva fight. I thought Anderson Silva looked hesitant. I thought he looked slow. Derek Brunson was also hesitant. He didn't attack like he normally does, which I understand because Silva is a counter striker. But I didn't understand the controversy with the Holly Holm fight. I saw a lot of people thinking that she won the fight. I thought Durandamy should have gotten at least one point taken for the late strikes after the bell. But even if she got a point taken away, I thought she won at least four of the rounds, maybe lost, maybe even won the fifth. But I thought she won at least four. Holly didn't look great. I think Holly's too small for that 145 weight class.
You brought up the Anderson Silva fight. You said he looks slow. That brings up a big point. When is enough enough with Anderson Silva? Because, I mean, he's still winning these fights, and he's still getting paydays, and people still want to watch him fight, but there's got to come a point where Anderson Silva, you know, has to start being, you know, told maybe you should hang it up.
Well, the thing is about Anderson Silva in his last few fights, he looked like he was just in there having fun. I mean, he enjoys fighting. More power to him for enjoying it and being able to do it at a high level at his age. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Nick Diaz fight, which was his first fight back after his leg break, he looked hesitant, you know, rightfully so after he broke his leg. He looked hesitant, but still dominated the fight. After that, his next fight was, I believe, the Bisping fight, where it looked like he was playing with Bisping the whole time and that he could have really attacked and won at any moment, but he just, for whatever reason, decided not to. And then he fought Daniel Cormier on, you know, 2 days' notice, spent the whole fight on his back, which scratched that fight, whatever. And then the Derek Brunson fight, again, same thing as with the Diaz fight. Just looked like he was playing with him and that he could have finished him at any time he wanted, but he didn't. So it's like, if you don't want to try and finish guys like you did for 16 straight fights, then what are you still doing it for? I was so disappointed. I was really bored watching it. That was the only reason I bought that pay-per-view, was because I wanted to watch Silva fight, and he did nothing. It was really disappointing.
At some point, maybe Silva has to consider, you know, walking out of the UFC and going to fight for another promotion, maybe? Because I mean, if the whole thing is for love of fighting, then, you know, you're just basically at that point taking up a spot for a younger guy that could, you know, get that payday.
Well, I mean, he's still a big star and considered arguably the best ever. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine seeing him go to another promotion, but I don't think he cares about being champion anymore. I think he just likes fighting. So it seems like he's just going to be a guy that just fights on cards against whoever they throw him in against at whatever weight class. I know he's talked about dropping to welterweight to fight Conor McGregor, which is borderline ridiculous.
I kind of have a feeling of the way that fight would go.
Yeah, that's a whole other discussion. But, I mean, he's just, it doesn't make sense to me for him to keep fighting if he's just going to get in there and bounce around in circles and not try to actually fight somebody the way he used to.
You're talking about the way someone used to. Holly Holm, is she a flash in the pan? Because since beating Ronda Rousey, she hasn't exactly taken over the world, so to speak. What's the deal with Holly Holm? Is it a camp thing? Is it she's going up against some good competition?
Well, Holly Holm is at arguably the best MMA gym in the world at Jackson Winklejohn. And I just think so far in the UFC, the only fight she's looked spectacular in was the Rousey fight. She had two fights before the Rousey fight against, you know, relatively bad, I don't want to say bad competition because there is no bad competition in the UFC, but lower ranked fighters. Her first fight against Raquel Pennington, who's a great fighter, but at the time wasn't ranked, won a split decision, then fought Marion Renault, who's not ranked, and then got a title shot, beat Rousey, fought Misha, was winning that fight, I thought she was winning every round, and then Misha caught her with the choke, and Misha's an all-time great. And then she fought Shevchenko, who is probably the best striker in the bantamweight division, lost that fight, moved up a weight class, and then fought the best Muay Thai striker in that division. So I don't think she's a thing of the past. I just think her last three fights, she's fought really, really good competition. So I think her next fight, she needs to try her best to fight a lower-ranked person and get her confidence back up to build herself back to that top five position. I know she's campaigning for a rematch with Jermaine Durandamy because of the late strikes and whatever and the quote-unquote controversy. But I think she needs to take a step back and take a quote-unquote warm-up fight and get herself back on track.
It's hard to believe the woman that conquered Ronda Rousey, and of course that's really the point where Ronda Rousey started to fall apart was the home fight, is now 0-3 in her last three fights. It's tough to believe. Anything about Glover Teixeira's fight before we move on?
You know, his fight wasn't too spectacular. The one thing I want to point out about that fight was his opponent. I mean, that was a tough guy coming in and fighting Glover Teixeira.
Jared Cannonier.
Yeah,
Cannonier.
I believe that was his first UFC fight. Oh no, he's been in for a while. But as a relatively unknown guy, and came in against, you know, I believe Glover's ranked number 3, if I'm correct. Let me check that real quick. Glover is ranked, 3 in the light heavyweight division. So that Cannonier guy's tough.
Cannonier, he comes out of Alaska. He fights out of Anchorage, Alaska.
Yeah,
that's up there.
Yeah, that's a tough guy coming in against Glover, and he didn't do anything offensive really to scare Glover or really put him in any danger. But you know, going in there and surviving three rounds with Glover is not an easy task for anybody, and he did it, and I'm looking forward to watching him climb that ladder in that division.
So that's UFC 208. Really quickly, we're gonna look ahead to 209. You got Stephen Wonderboy Thompson versus Tyron Woodley. It got some good fights here. Rashad Evans is gonna be in action. Alistair Overeem versus Mark Hunt. Khabib Nurmagomedov, he's going to be fighting Tony Ferguson. Just some really good fights here. So 209 is looking like it's got some potential here, Tom. What fight are you looking forward to? And anything else you want to tell us about 209?
I will say, to begin, I'm really disappointed that neither the Diaz brothers are fighting on the UFC 209 card.
They're out somewhere on a boat enjoying that giant paycheck. That's what they are.
Yeah, they... I'm really disappointed, but anyway, couple things on 209. The fight I'm most excited about is Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Tony Ferguson. Khabib is a guy that's never lost before, has had some issues with staying healthy, and I believe this is either the second or the third time that he is scheduled to face Tony Ferguson. So hopefully he stays healthy. And Tony Ferguson has won 9 fights in a row in the lightweight division, which is arguably the hardest division. So that's a fight that I have my eyes locked on. I'm excited. I can't wait for it. Also, Rashad Evans got officially cleared to fight on this card because his last two fights got canceled because he couldn't pass his medical exam for brain issues. I don't think he should be fighting, but if he got cleared by the doctors and by the commission, he should be good. He's dropping down to middleweight. He'll be at 185 for the first time in the UFC, and I'm excited because his last fight was supposed to be at middleweight, and right before he started his weight cut, he was 195 pounds, solid, lean muscle, which is not something we've seen from Rashad, and I'm excited to see him make his middleweight debut against Dan Kelly.
Alistair Overeem versus Mark Hunt. Interesting matchup between the guy that beat Mark Henry and the guy that beat Brock Lesnar and the guy that Brock Lesnar beat up. So that's gonna be an interesting fight as well. The welterweight scene with Tyron Woodley and Stephen Thompson. Where do you see that fight going?
That was a good fight the last time they fought. I'm excited to see the rematch. I agreed with the fact that it was a draw. I thought Stephen Thompson won 3 rounds, and I thought I thought Woodley won two, one of the rounds being a 10-8, which would then make it a draw. I agreed with that. But with the new unified rules, with the adding of the 10-7 rounds for dominant rounds, I think that could play a big factor in this round if either of them were to get a really, really dominant round again. I don't know, man. It all depends on who made the right adjustments, because in the last fight, Stephen Thompson is very karate / taekwondo oriented, so he throws a lot of kicks. And in his last fight with Tyron Woodley, in the first round, he got taken down off those kicks, so he went to a much more boxing oriented game plan, which is when Tyron was able to catch him. When he was able to close that distance because he wasn't worried about the kicks anymore. So I think it all depends on who made the right adjustments. If Stephen Thompson really focused a lot on his boxing, then I think he'll do great. But I think Woodley needs to focus more on his wrestling. You know, he's a college wrestler. He wrestled with Ben Askren, who's arguably the best wrestler MMA has ever seen, and he's kind of lost touch with his wrestling, and he focuses on his striking too much because he's got that knockout power. I think if he can focus more on his wrestling and get it to the ground, I think he could win. I'm gonna, you heard it here first, I'm taking Tyron Woodley, even though I can't stand the guy. Complains too much, hate Tyron Woodley, but I think Tyron Woodley is gonna make the proper adjustments, and I think he's gonna get it done.
March 4th in Las Vegas, the T-Mobile Arena, that is when you will see UFC 209. So that's looking in the rearview mirror and looking ahead. Let's look at one of the big fights that I guess we can call it a UFC mixed martial arts type of thing, because really it's involving the biggest star of the UFC and mixed martial arts, Conor McGregor versus Floyd Mayweather. Now, they've gone back and forth on this for it seems like ever, but we're starting to hear murmurs now that they're close financially, at least. I've even read a report where they've agreed to terms financially. So, Tom, I want to ask you, have you heard anything else? And what's your opinion on McGregor versus Mayweather?
I did read something today that Freddie Roach, who is big in the boxing community, he's Manny Pacquiao's coach. Mm-hmm. He's GSP's boxing coach. Mm-hmm. He came out, it was either today or yesterday, and said that the fight is official, that he said that everything's signed, financially ready to go. They have a venue, a date. He said it's all signed and ready to go. They're just waiting to figure out their marketing plan and their marketing scheme and all that before they announce it. But I mean, I don't mean to sound mean, but if you've heard Freddie Roach talk, he doesn't exactly have the greatest brain anymore. So he might have misheard some information, but I really think that fight's going to happen. McGregor recently did a pay-per-view interview with Ariel Helwani, and 90% of it was him saying, Floyd's next, my next fight, I'm stepping into the ring with boxing gloves on. It was like his whole thing. And then a couple weeks later, he had some media events in Ireland, which he then canceled to fly to Las Vegas to have meetings with the UFC, to have meetings with Floyd, to have meetings with the Las Vegas with the Nevada State Athletic Commission. So I think he's ready to go. I think it's 100% going to happen, and I think it's going to happen this year.
Imagine being Jose Aldo in this situation, still wanting that fight with Conor McGregor, and looking across and seeing McGregor.
Jose Aldo went out and got is trying to get his boxing license now. He wants to go slip over to boxing. Which is absurd, because unless your name is Floyd Mayweather or Manny Pacquiao, you're really not making that much money in boxing. There's really not much money in boxing anymore unless you're one of those big, big stars. Yeah. So why move over from MMA to boxing? Jose Aldo, in his Conor McGregor fight, he's the champion, so he gets pay-per-view points. That fight did not exactly sure how many. Let's just say a million buys. Because it's Conor McGregor, he made over $1 million in that fight for 13 seconds. He will never get that in boxing.
No,
ever.
No.
Cut it out, Jose.
This is Jose looking for another venue on how to fight Conor McGregor. He's thinking, I don't want to say Jose is completely like oblivious to why McGregor is getting these fights or, you know, why this is happening.
But, oh no, he's oblivious, 100%. Oh, he doesn't understand how the business works.
I know. In a way, and to tie this into the flagship show, it's almost like he's our George Lucas character, where like he walks around and believes that he is the center of the world and that the world revolves around him. So for him, he looks at Conor McGregor going and fighting Floyd Mayweather, and he doesn't see that it's a money fight. He sees, oh, McGregor wants to be a boxer. Well, I know how to fight him. I'm going to become a boxer. And it's like, yeah, no, dude.
He doesn't get it. He does not get it.
That's not why he's doing this. He's doing this because it's going to be a billion-dollar pay-per-view.
The problem with Jose, his biggest problem is that he doesn't speak English. He complains about money and all that and this and that. Great fighter. One of the best ever. He was undefeated for 10 years. Yeah. He's got great skills. Mm-hmm. But the UFC is an American company. If you want to be a big star in an American company and make a lot of money, which Jose has, but apparently it's not enough, he needs to learn how to speak English.
Yeah, there are
gyms in the United States, I believe it's American Top Team, I'm not positive, that force all of their foreign-born fighters to take English class 3 days a week for that reason. Mm-hmm. You cannot be a big star in an American company unless you speak English.
That's the only
exception that I can think of is Anderson Silva.
Yeah.
He was very selective with when he decided he could speak English. Anderson Silva can speak English, 100%. Mm-hmm. But he was always selective about when he needed a translator or not. He's probably the only one I could think of that never spoke English that's been a huge star in the UFC.
Well, I think to the point of Anderson Silva, he also has a fighting style and he's very flashy. He became a character in and of himself. So,
well, the thing is about Anderson Silva is that he wasn't that big of a star. He wasn't a huge star for that long.
No.
He became a big star when he front kicked Vitor Belfort in the face.
Yes.
Which was, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. It was his 13th fight in the UFC. That's when he became superstar mm-hmm. status. And he was finishing everybody. He was going up weight classes, beating guys like Forrest Griffin. And then he front kicked Vitor Belfort in the face. And that put him over.
That pole vaulted him into stardom.
But I wonder, had he spoken perfect English that whole time, because he was finishing everybody. Mm-hmm. Had he spoken English that whole time, he would have been a big star for much, much longer and would have became a bigger star earlier on in his mm-hmm. career.
That's the thing about Jose has to understand. And again, this is not us, being offensive to other races. It's just if you want to be a big star in the UFC, you got to speak the language that most of the people that watch the UFC speak.
Yeah.
And let's just say, you know, those pay-per-view buys aren't happening in Panama or South America or Mexico or Cuba or Puerto Rico. They're happening in the United States. They're happening in New Jersey, New York, Chicago, L.A., Dallas, Philly. That's where those pay-per-view buys are happening. They're not happening, you know, in Peru, where I don't know if they even have TVs. It's just that's where they're at. That's the reality of the situation. So,
yeah.
You know, Jose, if you want to be this big star, stop being an idiot. Like, don't believe like it's not because Conor McGregor doesn't like you. It's not because he doesn't think you're a good it won't do buys. Anything McGregor touches will turn to gold. Thing is, he can make more gold fighting someone else. Now, getting back to the McGregor Mayweather
fight,
fighting
someone else who's a bigger star than himself,
probably one of the biggest stars in the history of fighting altogether, regardless of
one of the biggest stars in sports ever. He is
yes.
the highest paid athlete of all time.
Yes, he a highest paid athlete. He is biggest talker. I mean, you talk like Floyd Mayweather transcends everything. You walk down the street and you ask a random stranger, "Do you know who Floyd Mayweather is?" They say yes. They know exactly who he is. He's a boxer.
Floyd Mayweather might not know how to read. Not might. He definitely doesn't know how to read. But the guy is a great businessman. He's a great athlete. He knows how to sell pay-per-views. He knows how the fight business works.
Yep.
He is the guy for Conor McGregor to fight. And it is 100% going to happen. And I'm more excited about watching the press conferences more than watching the fight, because the fight is going to be so one-sided, it's absurd. But the build-up to the fight, the promotion, the press conferences, the commercials,
the appearances on ESPN, the appearances on First Take, on Fox Sports.
Conor McGregor is going to put such a crazy spin on the fact that Floyd can't read. And I am so excited to see what creative twists he puts on the fact that Floyd can't read, and he's gonna do it 100%.
I'm eager to hear, like, during the fight, McGregor yell out things like "you can't read" or "read this" or something like that. Because he just, if there's one thing McGregor can do, he can talk trash, right? Getting back to the speculative aspect of it again. We're saying this fight is going to happen. Still not 100% guaranteed. The recent report I read, and I actually had to read this report out on air last week, the Nevada Fight Commission, or the commissioner of the Nevada Fight Association, or whatever, Athletic Association, he issued a statement, and in that statement was an interesting quote. He said there are a couple obstacles left to overcome, but, and this was the smoking gun in the whole thing. He said, in instances like this, where there's a lot of money on the table, things usually tend to work themselves out. That gave me a lot of excitement to look forward to a fight that's happening between these two.
This will be the biggest pay-per-view of all time. This will do more buys than Mayweather-Pacquiao did.
I firmly believe this is going to be the biggest pay-per-view within the next 10 years. In the world of pay-per-views, this is going to get the most. And it's going to be this way until the next 10 or 15 years when they find the next two superstars of fighting. Until that time... We have to speculate on this. So, if I told you, Tom, give me a date to when you think this is going to happen.
It's either going to be a New Year's card.
Okay.
Happen in December, whatever Saturday is before New Year's, or the first Saturday in January, either then or Labor Day weekend.
You think it's going to be Labor Day week? So, if it's New Year's, that's a full year of just sitting here and waiting, and like that, we still have over 300 days.
A lot of buildup.
I know, this is going to be amazing. I have so many more questions. I really want to know, what are some of the other hurdles? So, you've gone out and you've fought before. You have, I mean, again, nothing to this level. But what other hurdles do you have to get over when getting yourself into a fight or booking into a fight? Like, what other hurdles are there besides financial?
Well, I'm going to quote Chael Sonnen here. Okay. The most difficult part of the fight game is getting two fighters to say yes, which we've already got. Floyd and Conor both said yes. Then you need the promoter to put it on. The problem here is that Conor, for whatever reason, thinks, and he said this in his interview with Ariel Helwani, that he thinks he can do it without the UFC. The problem there is that he has a contract with the UFC.
I was gonna say.
If he tries to do it under Mayweather's promotion, under whatever boxing promotion is going to put it on, he's going to be in a huge legal battle.
Oh, yeah.
Which he will lose 100%. So he said in the interview, everybody needs to learn their place. Basically saying, this is my life. I'm going to do whatever the hell I want, whether or not the UFC says yes. Dana White has came out on, I believe, Colin Coward's show, and he made an offer. Dana White is interested in helping promote this fight. Mm-hmm. Whether he's going to help promote or whether he is going to let Conor go do it and do like a co-promote or whatever. I think that is the biggest issue, because ever since Dana White made that offer to Floyd Mayweather, which was $25 million, which is like pocket change to Floyd, he hasn't really said much about it other than saying, if Conor tries to do this without the UFC, it'll be a fail, which it will. So I think the biggest obstacle here in getting this fight to happen is Conor's stubbornness and Conor's belief that he can do this without the UFC. He needs to get the UFC on board. He needs to sit down with Dana and Floyd at the same time, and they need to figure this out, all three of them together, because without Dana White involved, this fight's not going to happen.
and I think we all want this fight to happen. I remember like hearing some stories about Dana White being involved in the behind the scenes stuff with this fight. And he said at one point 50 Cent was talking about this fight. Like this, that's how you know that this is transcending all forms of pop culture and Meryl Streep being an idiot. When 50 Cent calls you up and says, "Hey, is this going down?" Like, I know 50's not exactly as popular as he used to be, but like he has no business being involved in this fight, yet he is.
Yeah.
So that, you know, again, this is going to be huge, and somewhere Meryl Streep is sitting there going, "It's still not art to me. I want that kind of money because I don't get paid that money anymore." But anyway, so that's the McGregor Mayweather thing. Again, I cannot wait for this thing to start. But while we were away, Tom, we missed some things. So here's a segment I'm going to call What We Missed. So Tom, what did we miss in our couple of weeks, or I should say a month or two off from doing the show? What did we miss?
So the last one we did was after 205, right?
Yes.
Okay. So UFC 206 was a big pay-per-view for me. Max Holloway fought Anthony Pettis for the interim 145-pound championship, which I didn't quite understand, stripping Connor, that whole thing, whatever. That's a whole other conversation. Anyway, Max beat Anthony Pettis handily. He made that look easy. And he is a young, young guy. Max Holloway, I believe, he is 25 years old. He just turned 25 in December. So Max Holloway looked great. Kelvin Gastelum also moved up to 185, defeating Tim Kennedy, putting himself in line in that on that card. That was great. Donald Cerrone beat Matt Brown that night, which was great then. And then Donald Cerrone lost his last fight to Jorge Masvidal, which was mind-blowing. That was a crazy fight. Masvidal's a savage. I love him. And then we move on to the next event, which was Paige VanZant versus Michelle Waterson, two smoking hot babes in the main event. Michelle Waterson choked out Paige VanZant, put her to sleep. That was fantastic. My boy Mickey Gall beat Sage Northcutt that night and then called out legend Dan Hardy like a savage. I don't think he's going to get that fight, but he's a savage. Uriah Faber had his retirement fight. He won on that card. That was also a great event. Then we move on to UFC 207, Ronda Rousey's Fear the Return fight. I knew right from the get-go that was going to be a bad fight for her. She took off 6 months after her loss to Holly Holm without being in the gym. This isn't a sport you can take that long off and then jump back into a title fight against a savage like Amanda Nunes. Great fight. Cody Garbrandt became a huge star that night, defeating Dominic Cruz. That was mind-blowing as well. Did not see that coming. That was fantastic. And now Cody Garbrandt and TJ Dillashaw are coaching the next season of The Ultimate Fighter, and then they're going to bump heads, former teammates. That's a great night of fights as well. Ronda Rousey's done. She's never going to fight again. She's retired. I just heard today that she signed some big deal being a character on some TV show. So she's got an acting gig. She's not doing big movies anymore. She's lost that. The WWE lost interest in her after this fight. Whatever his name is, WWE, Vince McMahon has come out and said that he lost interest. Nunes is talking about moving up to 145 to try to win a second belt. I'd rather her stay at 135 and defend her belt against Shevchenko. I want to see them fight again. That would be a great fight. What are your thoughts on Rousey? Where do you think she's going?
You're right. The WWE did lose a lot of interest. I think the biggest blow to Rousey was when, and this is one of the reasons why the WWE doesn't want anything to do with her. Murmurs that she auditioned for the role of Captain Marvel.
Yes,
the character Captain Marvel. Murmurs on that were Ronda Rousey can't act for a bucket of cow manure.
Yes.
So.
God, so bad.
As soon as that came out, and as soon as they found out that Ronda Rousey, all that she can do is fight and look pretty, that's a problem. Now, of course, the WWE...
She was supposed to be in the remake of Roadhouse.
Yes, she was supposed to do the Roadhouse stuff, but again, Captain Marvel stuff and auditioning for that role as... it was kind of a broad audition. They were looking at her for other stuff as well. When that went south... you just blew yourself out of a lot of opportunities there. So, speaking from a WWE side... They've done stuff with people that can't talk before, like, for instance, Brock Lesnar. I don't know if you've ever heard Brock Lesnar talk. He sounds like a five-year-old that's got his danglers in a knot. He's really high-pitched. And, like, you know, so you wouldn't expect that. So they got Paul Heyman to talk for him. They could do something with Ronda Rousey on that sense, but the problem is, going back to the UFC stuff, she fought two more fights than she probably should have ever fought.
Yeah. You
know? Getting her clock cleaned after Holly Holm, I would have said, okay, you know what? That's it. Love UFC. I'll maybe come back to it in 5 years. Let me go out and make as much money. Because, Ronda Rousey had a chance to make so much money. Like, she would have done the Roadhouse stuff. They would have had no problem because her star power at that point was through the roof. She goes off and does Roadhouse. She'll make, $50 million doing that. Goes to the WWE. They'll probably pay her $7 million to do a pay-per-view, which is ridiculous for a woman. And wrestling, she could have gone off and done so many things. But now, I mean, Tom, I don't think I would want Ronda Rousey to appear at my birthday party, and like that's how.
Let's not get crazy here.
It's probably a little too much. But like her star power
I see your point though. Her star power is severely diminished. She should have done what Gina Carano did. She should have retired after the first loss. She should have never came back. I honestly thought she was going to beat Holly Holm when that fight came up. But clearly that didn't happen. But her fight against Nunes was so bad that, however you actually pronounce it, whatever. Her coming back was such a big mistake physically, mentally, emotionally, financially, in all facets of life. That was a bad decision. Especially coming back into a title fight. Had she came back and fought, the 10th ranked girl and had a competitive fight, it would have been fine. But going out there and getting knocked out in 48 seconds or whatever it was.
Not a good look.
It ruined her.
She looked unfocused. She looked unfocused in the Holly Holm fight, and she looked extremely unfocused in the...
She looked, to me personally, in the Nunes fight, she looked focused. And then she got punched in the face, and then it was all downhill from there. Nunes came out through the one jab, and then she put herself right back in Australia. She was lost. She didn't know what to do. Put no offense out after that first jab. She might have thrown maybe two or three punches, and that was just like wasn't even a punch, just like a push, like get away from me, you're hurting me, sort of thing. I don't mean to pile on Ronda. I like Ronda. She entertained me for a lot of fights. I met Ronda one time. She was really sweet. She autographed my T-shirt. I don't want to pile on her. She's great. I wish her the best. I hope the TV show that she signed on to does 10 seasons. I hope she's okay financially, emotionally. Shout out to you, Ronda. Keep your head up. Don't go down that whole hole that you were in after the Holly fight. Also, I don't like your boyfriend.
Well, I was going to add, we're being a little heavy on Rousey, but it's a shame to see there go. It does look like that Roadhouse movie is going to be made. So
with Ronda?
Yeah, it looks like it's not announced yet. But she, on her filmography on Wikipedia, and of course people lie on Wikipedia, I get it, but it hasn't removed itself from there. So I think it's just a matter of, if she has it, it's there. If she hasn't, it's not her role, it's only a matter of time. But hopefully, I want to see Ronda Rousey do well, because she had captured just the culture at that, the society at that time. It was wrapped around her finger. But I agree with you. I'll go a step further with her boyfriend. She needs to get about as far away from that camp as possible. Because that camp, and I think it's safe to say that her camp is now officially a mixed martial arts cancer.
Yeah.
I think it's safe to say that. I think Travis Brown is not exactly the best guy in the world, and I think that's weighing down. Like, This is a girl that had
Rick Lewis, by the way, with that post fight interview. That was great.
What would he say?
I can't say a quote for quote, but he basically said something like, because he just fought Travis Brown on Sunday and knocked him out. And in the post fight interview, he said something like, "That guy over there calls himself a man, but he beats women. Where's Ronda Rousey's fine ass at?"
Ooh.
And then, aside from the whole Ronda Rousey thing, in the post fight press conference, they had asked him how he recovered from the body shots, because he took a lot of body shots. He said something along the lines of, "The way I get rid of pain from my body shots is in between rounds, I just let out a fart."
That's savage.
Fantastic. I love Derek Lewis. I hope he gets a title fight just because he said that he farts in between rounds.
That is absolutely savage. But getting back to Rousey, it's a shame to watch her because, again, we talked about the rise of Anderson Silva. You talked about the rise of Anderson Silva finishing people. That's what Rousey was doing. I mean, her first 12 fights, there's 10, 11 finishes in those 12 fights. And then she was 12-0 after beating Beth Correa. And then 0-2, and those losses that she's had, Holm, Nunez, those are losses of not just
brutal. Her record, brutal losses.
They're brutal losses, and they lose all of her momentum. Like, she had the world, in her hand. She could have gone off, after the Holm fight, go off, sign with the WWE. They allow you to do movies. You can do the Roadhouse movie. People will overlook the fact that you can't act, and they will allow you to do Captain Marvel. That TV show's an extra paycheck. Don't lose to Amanda Nunes. And the Holly Holm fight was damning, because that's where you saw Rousey, could not take losing. The Nunes fight is when you saw the breaking of a human soul. And that's tough to watch. That's really tough to watch. But another thing that you wanted to bring up is a little bit of a changing on the guard in terms of the commentary team, Tom. What happened?
Thank God! Goldberg is gone. I'm so happy. I can't stand Mike Goldberg. I never liked him. He made a lot of money doing this stuff for the last 20 years. Still can't figure out the terminology. It's brutal. He once said that somebody landed a leg kick to the body. Cannot stand Mike Goldberg. Doesn't understand the sport. Been around for 20 years. Still doesn't get it. I will say his replacement, what's his name? Todd Grisham or whatever.
Yeah.
Not great. Wasn't a huge fan of his first performance this weekend, but he was definitely a step ahead of Goldberg. He did make a rather stupid comment, which I would like to point out. Whatever town they were in, what town were they in this weekend? Hold on. I got to find this. Let's see.
Well, to give some background on Mike Goldberg and the history of his broadcast career, he is not a fighting broadcaster. You can say what you want. That's not his sport. His sport is hockey, and his sport.
But he's been doing it for 20 years.
I know. I've heard his NFL play-by-play before, and it's not terrible. The thing is, he's stuck in the wrong sport. I've done play-by-play before in college. It's not easy. It really isn't.
No, no. If you do a sport for 20 years,
I'm not giving him any excuses. Thing is. Sometimes when you love something so much and you're just not good at it, you have to kind of, go from being the voice of it to just being a fan. Uh-huh. And unfortunately, Mike Goldberg enjoys being the voice of it. For instance, basketball's not exactly my strong suit. I do like calling basketball games, but I'd rather be a fan because calling basketball games is very difficult. When I called a hockey games, that's very difficult. So I think I'd rather enjoy calling a baseball game and watching a hockey game, because calling a hockey, you got to be beat for beat. I've never called a fight before. I've called some odd sports, but I've never called a fight before. I don't exactly know what goes into it, but if you don't know, like for instance, in the WWE, there's a commentator, Michael Cole, doesn't know all the moves, so he doesn't try to go tick for tack with the moves. Now he tries to sometimes, and it's abysmal. but he doesn't know the move terminology. So what he does is he just kind of allows, he tells a story while the fight's going on. And that story crescendos into the finish of the fight, and then he's very good at closing it out, or at least the match, he's closing it out. Goldberg could have done something along the lines of that, where, okay, you may not know all the moves, let Rogan do the moves, let Rogan handle the moves, tell the story while the fight's going on, and allow the crescendo to be where you kind of get the moves down, or at least, you know, give Rogan the opportunity to crescendo. I do think Joe Rogan's a very good play-by-play guy. Problem is, he's on
crack. Because he knows what he's talking about. Yeah. He knows martial arts. He knows the techniques. And he doesn't just say what the technique is. Mm-hmm. He explains what it is, what it means, how you do it properly. I also have an incredibly biased opinion towards Joe Rogan because I'm a huge fan of Joe Rogan. Have been for a long time.
Joe Rogan's fantastic.
But yeah, there's not many people I know that are anti-Joe Rogan commenting the UFC. But I want to get back to the stupid thing that this guy Grisham said.
Okay.
They came back from a commercial. The fight was in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Mm-hmm. So they came back from a commercial, and just out of nowhere, he just goes, "For those of you wondering, people that live in Halifax are not called Halifaxians. They're called Halifaloshians or whatever," he said. And he's like, just saw that on Wikipedia over the commercial break. And I'm just thinking to myself, dude.
Not very why? Professional.
Why does that matter at all? And I hope that's not a precursor for what is to come from this guy. I hope whoever was in the background was like, yeah, no more of that. Cut that out. Don't do that again.
From Grisham's history, he is another guy like Goldberg does football. He was in wrestling at one point with the WWE. Grisham's a better football commentator. I really don't understand why UFC doesn't do this. Really quick, before I get to what my opinion on Rogan, I want to wrap up Grisham. Grisham is at calling wrestling. There's a reason he's not with the WWE anymore. And, you know, it's partially is because he just kind of didn't get it, or didn't get like what it takes to be a commentator. It's nothing against him. It's just, you know, sometimes it comes to you a little faster than others. As for UFC and what they should do, I don't understand why they don't just move Rogan over to play-by-play and go with like Sonnen or someone or a former fighter and just have them like, I mean, I should say not a former fighter that can talk and put them with Rogan.
They've recently put in Daniel Cormier.
No.
I think it was the last pay-per-view. They had John Anik, Joe Rogan, and Daniel Cormier. Which, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of Cormier, but I mean, I don't like the whole three-person calling crew for fights. It might work in other sports. For fights, having three people talking.
No.
For people that aren't big fans of the sport, that don't know what voice they're listening to, when there's three of them, I feel like it's too much. I'm a huge fan of Rogan. Mm-hmm. I don't mind Anik. So I know his voice. I know Cormier's voice because I watch all the press conferences from his fights and stuff. I know the voices. Not everybody knows the voices. I feel like for people that aren't as big of a fan as me, three voices is too much. And I hope they hash that out in the coming pay-per-views.
They're having the same problem in the WWE. They're actually pushing that into four people booths, which is,
oh god,
it's nuts. I don't understand why, you know, I've always been a very big proponent of two people, a broadcasting team of three or four people, but a booth of only two. You have one sideline reporter and one person that goes into the locker room, and that's it. And yeah, that's a four-person team. I don't get why they don't just do this. Joe Rogan, and then get like an old fighter. Ken Shamrock, maybe? Dan Severn?
The thing is about those old fighters is that the color commentary is a much more difficult position than a play-by-play. Am I saying that right? Goldberg was the color, right?
Goldberg was the play-by-play. Rogan was the color.
Okay, so play-by-play is
play-by-play is difficult, but Rogan has proven that he can do like I've.
He said himself he hates doing play-by-play.
I know he hates it, but I've literally watched pay-per-views and watched these fights where halfway through Joe Rogan just starts doing the play-by-play. And I'm just like,
I don't understand why they needed to hire this new guy. Why they didn't just let John Anik do it. John Anik does the play-by-play during all the Fox events, all the ones that aren't pay-per-view. He's better than Goldberg.
I think it's
possibly because he's got his own separate thing on Fox. Mm-hmm. Like he does the UFC Insider or whatever show he does on Fox. I think that might play a part, but they need to figure out one person to go with Rogan. I agree with former fighter. If it would be a former fighter, Kenny Florian does it a lot, and Brian Stan does the announcing with Anik a lot. If either of them could do the play-by-play instead of the color, I think that would be great with Rogan. So I hope that would be something that they can figure out and hash out and get that going.
They could even do something where, like, for the big UFC events, like they have your fight nights and you have your UFC events. For smaller UFC events, you have Rogan and whoever. Like a coming attraction. Like, oh, what former fighter do you want on the fight night? And then you have like your main team, you know, so that way you don't have to drag Rogan around everywhere. You know,
well, Rogan's new contract is that he only does the pay-per-views in North America. Okay. So United States, Canada, Mexico. If there's any pay-per-views,
so
else, he doesn't do them.
So if they were to do... Like we referenced this earlier in the show, if they were to do GSP and McGregor in Ireland,
I mean, Joe Rogan's got some leeway. I'm sure he could say, "Hey, I'm calling this fight," and they'd be like, "Yes, sir, Mr. Rogan, sir." But he also likes getting high on his couch and watching it from his living room. Joe Rogan's got the UFC by the balls. He can do pretty much. He can announce any event that he feels like it.
I just I don't know. Like if they were to do that fight in Ireland or wherever, I can't imagine him not wanting in. Like I can understand if it was like a UFC, let's take Lesnar out of UFC 200, the Lesnar fight out of that. I could see if it was like a fight card that's not quite as stellar, you know. It's got a couple of good fights. Him saying, I'd rather, you know, take this one off if it's like going to be out in Melbourne, Australia, or in wherever. I could see him saying, I don't want to do that one. But if it's a fight like that, I don't see how Rogan would want to restrict himself. So, is there anything else on this segment of what did we miss?
Just a couple free cards. After UFC 207, there was Yair Rodriguez versus BJ Penn. Mm-hmm. Legend BJ Penn came back for whatever. Reason that was ridiculous. He should have never been in there.
Was it a one-off or is he back?
He claims that he's back and that he's gonna have more. He claims that he's gonna keep fighting until the UFC tells him no. So basically, he's gonna do what Chuck Liddell did and just keep fighting until Dana White is like, dude, you gotta retire.
Doesn't make any sense.
Which I mean, BJ Penn is a whole other level of crazy. He's fought at heavyweight before. His last couple fights were at 145 pounds. He's just a lunatic. I think he should stay retired.
Well, he was doing well for – he has the website. He was doing well for himself there.
Yeah, he's – I don't know. And he's got his own gym in Hawaii. I don't get it. And then the next fight after that was Shevchenko versus Pena, mm-hmm. which Shevchenko got a big submission win against the master grappler Juliana Pena, which was not – likely. Nobody saw that coming. And Shevchenko sets herself up for a title shot against Nunez. Hopefully Nunez will take that instead of trying to go up in weight. And then the next card after that, the Korean Zombie came back after a 3-year layoff because he joined the Korean military. Comes back, knocks out highly ranked Dennis Bermudez, who was ranked 11th, that might be updated since that fight. I believe he was top 10 when that happened, but comes back off a 3.5-year layoff, knocks out Dennis Bermudez in the first round, puts himself back in title contention. That was great to see. And Felice Herrig got a win that night. I got a soft spot for Felice Herrig. I love that girl. She's beautiful. She's sweet. She's cute, adorable, cuddly. I love that girl. I hope one day she will punch me in the face. And then the next fight after that was 208. So we covered that, and it looks like we are all caught up, my friend.
And we're all caught up, which means that we will be talking to you in a couple of weeks after March 4th and UFC 209. But that's the show today. It was a good one. We covered a lot. I like shows like this.
Real quick, March 4th, my buddy Eric Jung is making his boxing debut in the NJ Golden Gloves tournament. Mm-hmm. So shout out to Eric Jung. Best of luck in your boxing debut on that day, and I will see you in the gym on Thursday.
Good luck, Eric. Knock some heads around there, and maybe he can get the McGregor fight. Hopefully.
Yeah, he's right. He fights at 155, so maybe that will happen.
Maybe he'll get a Jose Aldo fight. Because Jose believes that he's going to be he makes me shake my head. Jose Aldo, that man is oblivious to the world. But anyway, that does it for today's show. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at Benny on the Radio. You can follow Tom on Twitter at, I guess, what, T Cross the Boss.
Boss is spelled BAWSS. That is an inside joke from high school. Don't ask.
Oh, now you have to tweet to him and ask him about that. But anyway, that does it for the UFC show. We'll be talking to you again in a couple of weeks. But for now, take care.